Coco Montoya, that's from the new album called Hard Truth, and that's a song about bullets. Bullets show up all too often in the Blues Break on WBGO, but also Hard Truth. That's what the blues is all about. That's what Coco Montoya is all about. You sing about everything in this new album. The devil, you sing about gambling, you sing about drinking, you sing about bullets. Life.
Yeah.
And well, you play hard, too.
I try to.
What inspires you to write the songs that you write?
Well, that's...
Other than life.
Well, there's not that much that... I don't write a lot. You know, I just whatever happens. Whenever the magic comes upon me with co-writers, I don't do well by myself.
Oh, well, you've always been... when I was reading about you a while ago, you've always been a collaborator in a way.
Yeah, it works better for me that. And then to bounce something off somebody and get immediate feedback, it kind of spurs things on.
Because
you know?
You started as a drummer.
Yeah, I sure did. Yeah.
And I postulated that you're known for playing really hard when you play guitar, hence the title of this album. But I wondered if you thunder so much as a guitarist because you were a drummer.
You know, I don't think I analyze that very much. It to me, it's almost the same thing. I know it's a different instrument, but the where I come from, playing music is just the same. As you know, drummer learning from Albert Collins and people like that, you know, it was everything was emotional based, you know, how you felt. And I think that just, but just when I moved to the guitar, it's the same thing. Same things that inspire me.
Tell us where you came from.
Where I came from? Well, I'm born in Santa Monica, California, and grew up in L.A. Pretty much it. Just a native L.A. boy, which is rare.
I'm just going to say, you don't think of Santa Monica as being the heart, you know, of the blues country, but L.A., there's, you know, certainly a scene.
It had its scene. It had things going on. I mean, I was born in the right era, obviously, with the music, because the music was making its transition from straight-ahead blues to jazz and bebop and into soul music and doo-wop music and things like that. And it's all comes from the blues. And of course, we had the Johnny Otis show out when I was a kid and on television on Channel 5. That helped a lot.
I've always felt that, what you just said, exactly, that it all comes from the blues.
Absolutely.
I think everything we play on WB show, there's blues in it.
It is. It is the beginning of it all to me.
So what actually, was seeing it on television or hearing it or what? What turns you on to wanting to do this?
Oh, unconsciously, I would imagine it was seeing it on television. The Johnny Otis show. Johnny Otis was an amazing human being that, you know, really brought a lot of these guys right out there on television every week. So you saw a variety of different kinds of music on his show, from jazz to country guys to you know, Big Mama Thornton and Eddie Clean, Ed Vincent, all these other guys you would see. And it was, you know, I just gravitated towards music. So when I saw all this, it was a feeling thing. And same thing for the records and 45s, especially of songs of the day when my older brother and two sisters, I used to sneak in and play their records, you know, and scratch. Of course, I got in a lot of trouble, but I couldn't resist it.
We're talking 45s, with the big hole and the big spindle and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Coco Montoya from a new album called Hard Truth. And he's with me on the WBGO on Wednesday night. He's going to be at Mexicali Live in Teaneck. We have to talk about Albert Collins. I think every interview you will ever do and every record you will ever make, there's something of Albert Collins.
Well, there's always a piece of him in everything I do, you know. He's an amazing man.
Totally by chance, right? I mean, you ended up connected, right?
The first time I actually met Albert Collins was totally social. I went to see Buddy Miles up at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Hollywood. Horn player, sax player, played with Buddy, played with Albert, told me all about him, and said they were going to meet up there to see Buddy Miles. So I virtually just sat at a table talking with him, didn't really know his music. It wasn't until a few months later that I actually saw him play, and it was amazing. Yeah.
What was it about him? And you've heard plenty of guitar players by then, but what was it about him?
Power, the emotion, the power that was in his playing. I mean, he was The sweetest guy, greatest guy, you know, humble, nice man. But when he got on stage, I mean, he took no prisoners. You know, he was intense.
And the famous running out with a long guitar cord.
Absolutely.
I saw him in Carnegie Hall, jump off the stage, run up and go out onto 57th Street. And those people out there didn't know what the hell was going on because they couldn't hear anything.
Oh, yeah, I know.
But we could hear it all.
I remember when somebody tried to make Albert use a wireless and he wouldn't do it. You know, he said, nah, it doesn't work for me. And he said, why? He says, well, it's the efforts, the people getting involved with the cable that makes it special.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, he knew exactly what he wanted, what he was doing, and how he affected people, and he kind of stuck to it, which is a great lesson.
Talk about you were a drummer to start with. That's what.
Yes.
Was this an opportunity for you to play the drums, or were you gravitating some other way?
Drums was just it was everything to me when I was a kid. You know, up into my years with John. I mean, with Albert. It was everything to me, you know. And then after I did the touring with Albert, and you know, had to come back off the cloud and realize that I had to pay some bills and take care of some things. I got out of the business. I was only going to achieve so much as a drummer. I was not very well educated as a drummer,
and it was a thing where he needed a drummer, and somebody said call Coco.
Well, he had my number. I saw him at a matinee at a little club in Culver City that I used to play at. And the Safari Room, T-Nix it was called. And, you know, he took my number down and I just never thought anything about it. And I happened to be at home hanging out with my buddies trying to figure out what we were gonna do for the day. And, you know, my mother called and said, there's an Albert Collins on the phone, wants to talk to you. And I said, what? You know, it shocked me. And he says, I really need a drummer. You know, would you be interested? And I said, yeah, I'd be interested. And he said, I figured in my brain, I'm saying we're going to rehearse a couple of weeks or something, you know, naively. And he said, he picked me up in about 3 hours. I wrapped my drums up in blankets and whatever I could, and we took off. And I did the gig cold turkey. That's how I started with Albert.
You just went on, he called the downbeat, and that was it.
That was pretty much it. They kind of ran it down to me verbally as we drove up to Oregon. The first show, it was in Eugene, the University of Oregon. And
you didn't have to worry too much about arrangements or anything, but you had to know where the beats were.
I wasn't really a blues drummer. He was desperate for a drummer. I didn't have my my education as far as playing with a guy of that caliber, but I tried to do my best for him, and when I told him I was willing to go home once he got somebody that was, you know, well-versed in the stuff, you know, he said, well, I like you, son. He said, I'll stick with you. If you want to stick with me, I'll stick with you.
And, wow.
Yeah. And he taught me virtually everything I needed as a blues drummer, you know.
And then he went on and taught you how to play the guitar.
Yeah, that was always always there. But Albert, definitely a huge influence in my time with him playing guitar and is very key into what I'm doing now.
Let's listen to you playing the guitar with Albert Collins. How about Don't Lose Your Cool?
Oh, great.
Albert Collins with Coco Montoya playing the second guitar. Like, he played so much he didn't really need a second, but it was a good time to have for you.
Oh, it was playing. A wonderful time just hanging out in Memphis with him. Jim Gaines produced that.
He taught you it like you'd be on the road, and he just, how did that happen? I mean, he taught you in the hotel and did give you lessons? And
not really lessons. I don't think it wouldn't have worked that way, because it never did work for me. I never took a lesson in my life, which is not something I'm really proud of. I would, hindsight, I wish I'd have studied a little more and been a little more, learned a little more of the...
You play left-handed and the guitar is upside down.
It's a mess. And but Albert was perfect for me because I wasn't educated, and he taught me how to... The way I've been doing it is the way we communicated. It's basically you feel it. You don't think about it so much. You just feel it and play it, you know, and that's where he was coming from. So a guy like Albert Collins, you absorb him. There's no sitting down and talking about pentatonic scales or anything like that. No. It's just you absorb. If you can't absorb them, you're not going to get anything.
Did he show you fingering or anything?
No, just by watching, by doing, by just observing, and just being around him. That's how I learned. I think everybody, Robert Cray was another guy that hung around with Albert quite a bit, and back in the day when I was drumming for Albert, Robert said the same thing. You absorb, this is the way you really get the feel from these guys, because none of these guys ever thought about what they did. They just did it. They never overthought anything.
Do you ever play the drums anymore?
No. Done.
When did you, was there a moment when you just said, that's it?
Kind of, yeah. When I realized I came back off the road after nearly 5 years with Albert, that I was top 40 had passed me by, because that's what I was doing before I met him. I wasn't technically sound. I just didn't have all the rudiments and all these things together. I learned what I wanted to learn, and I bypassed what I was bored with or whatever, I guess. And with the coming of funk and things like that, that started being the most popular stuff to do, I wasn't gonna get anywhere with that. So I figured this was my only chance at playing music. Now it's done. Now let's go get a real job and move on with life.
So. Did you do something besides music?
Yeah, well, I did everything after that. I just basically would play music on the weekends or a weekday, go to a jam session. It was just for fun. It was never to make a living after a while. I had a regular day job. And I was a bartender for quite a while, and enjoyed that. I had a good time doing that because there was no responsibility trying to make a living at being a musician, which I found very hard to do. It wasn't until, John Mayall asked me to join the Blues Breakers as a guitar player, apparently hearing me in Hollywood, that...
Another thing by chance for
you. By chance, absolutely. Nothing I pursued or went and auditioned for or anything. It was just something that happened. And I took the chance and got back into the business as a guitar player.
Hey, I happen to need a second guitar player. Are you free for tonight? something like that?
Mick Taylor was leaving for Bob Dylan's band.
And he offered you a gig, the actual gig.
Yeah. He basically said, I'm putting, another Blues Breakers together. And, it was, if you can come down to the Central in Hollywood, we're going to try out bass players and drummers. This other guitar player, Cal David, was going to get involved. And I said, all right, let's try it out. And it evolved from there. And I thought maybe if it lasted a couple of months, it'd be, at least I could say I was a Blues Breaker for a couple of months, Ended up being 10 years.
Just amazing. And with him, you went everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. John really opened a lot of doors for me.
And the world.
The world, the absolute world.
And you've been on the road ever since.
Yes.
I always point out that you play the gigs for free. What you get paid for is the pain in the ass of the road.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. It's you get paid for the bad meals, bad hotels, and road miles, but to play is still, I'm still that kid again. I still want to play, and I enjoy the music.
Because to get you to come on today, it's been 10 years since you've been with me, we had to figure out where to put your trailer or your truck. You're parked down the road up the block. Thanks to the folks up there.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I was really appreciative of that. I couldn't get in here otherwise.
When you were here 10 years ago, you played one of my favorite Albert Collins songs on that current album, because you do an Albert Collins song on almost every album, pretty much.
Almost, yeah. That's another thing that, I look at his catalog and whenever I'm doing a project and, I try to be honest with myself to make sure that I can interpret it my own way and bring something to it. If I can't, then I'm not going to just throw something on there and just, that's not going to be something a little bit more, a little extra, a little piece of me in there.
Because I can imagine Albert, if he hears you imitating him, would have said, don't do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean... Albert was about interpretation. That was the thing. He said, I got my heroes, Guitar Slim, BB's like a big brother, and BB was like a big brother to him. And, He said, I love BB. He said, I love T-Bone. He said, but I don't want to sound like it. I want to be me.
Right.
He said, that's what you want to do, son. Take what you learn and apply it and make it your own. You
know? Well, the song is Put the Shoe on the Other Foot, but it's also Put the Tune on a Different Guitar. Coco Montoya, Put the Shoe on the Other Foot. That's from an album called Dirty Deal. Came out 10 years ago, and that's the last time Coco Montoya was on with me. Coco and Michael back together again in the Blues Break on WBGO.
Not to be denied. Here we are.
It's been too long. Yeah, the thing about you is you're known for hard truth and very explosive playing, and yet you're basically this very nice, sweet guy like Albert Collins was.
Well, I got my influences, and between him and B.B. King, there was a pretty good, strong message there of trying to be humble and make sure that you're humble when you come off the stage.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you picked up more than just how to play the guitar.
Yeah, absolutely. With those wonderful men in my life, I mean, I picked up a lot more.
It's interesting, because when I was writing about you a while ago, about this album, actually, and I said that I was talking about Albert and you, and I didn't want to put it that Albert taught you to play the guitar. Is it Albert taught you how to be a guitarist?
Yeah.
And there's a difference there.
There's a big difference. You're right.
And he changed your life.
In many ways. Yeah. I just in everyday life, he was like a father figure. He took me under the wing musically, which is great, and that's a whole different story. But what he was to me as a father figure was... Well, I couldn't. I don't know. I don't know if I would be where I am without him.
Because your Aunt Tilly can teach you how to play the guitar, but how to play a G7th chord. Or
yeah.
But how to have a life like this?
How to handle life? Albert was very giving in a lot of ways, in many ways. One of the most amazing human beings I've ever met on this earth.
I didn't know. You just happened to mention casually that you worked with Joe Turner, and Joe Turner, you learned plenty from Joe Turner.
Well, that was a great time back in L.A. We were talking about the influences. Joe was out there. Lowell Fulson was out there. At any given time, a lot of us young musicians would meet up on a gig that we got called for to back up Joe or back up Lowell Fulson or Shaky Jake Harris or people like that. They were everywhere. And so me and Walter Trout would end up on a gig backing up somebody. He used to back up J.D. Nicholson all the time. And I'd run into, Bob Hype from Canned Heat and Juke Logan, God rest his soul. Some great people. We all would run into each other. And we were all going to school every time we went to these gigs. And Joe Turner was just another guy that you learn just by being around them, I learned a lot of things about him.
I saw him right toward the end, and it was an effort getting him onto the stage, and he sat, and he was like a man mountain.
Yeah.
And his chops were almost gone, but you knew everything he was singing about. You didn't understand.
Absolutely.
You didn't articulate words quite like he did earlier on, but you knew exactly what it was about when he was singing.
Oh yeah, Joe was an amazing human being. A really great guy. I remember in the old days, I was telling you that. I remember a couple of times he would try and get me to sneak him a shot of bourbon and a beer, and he didn't want his wife to find out. So like you would take, boy, if she caught you doing that, she would let you have it. And I one time told Joe, I said, Joe, I can't do that. You're a sick man. You can't do that. He said, you listen to me. He says, I got congestive heart failure. I got the cancer. So I got a lot. He said, I got emphysema. He said, what's it gonna do? Kill me? I immediately just said, you know what? Let me go get you a beer and a shot of bourbon.
At this point,
you just do whatever you want to do. I'll take whatever happens. But that was a lesson learned from a great guy, too. He was an amazing person. I was lucky to do that.
Were you a drummer? Were you a singer?
I started dabbing into that. I wasn't doing too much of it, but it became more of a necessity when you start your own career. And I started working with John. I even did it even more. I did it with Albert, but usually singing backups with him, coming up with the harmony parts, We used to got that feeling before he ever recorded it, and I came up with the harmony part for it,
That's a lot of people don't realize until somebody says something it's in your face seeing it every time you saw B.B. King play, is he didn't sing or play and play at the same time, ever.
No.
Play or he'd sing.
Call and response, yeah. He would do that all the time. And he would tell you in a minute, he's like, I don't do them both. He says, I just say, play a little bit, I sing something, I play a little bit.
I never could figure out how like Nat Cole would play the piano. And Nat Cole was a hell of a piano player.
Oh, incredible
and
piano player.
He was playing at a 45-degree angle to the keys.
Right.
Looking out and singing. So how he did that, I don't know. That's still phenomenal.
There's some amazing people through the years like that that's why I mentioned Robert Cray. He amazes me when I go see him. I haven't seen him for a while. I consider him a very good friend. He's amazing. I watch the guys sing in one tempo and play these incredible rhythm parts that are a completely different tempo, and he doesn't seem to look or miss anything. You know, he's so spot on. He's an amazing guy.
You can learn that from other cultures too. You watch Jean Gilberto, the great.
Yeah.
I mean, that cat, he's singing and playing and like almost in two different tempos at the same time. Or even sometimes his right hand and his left hand are not.
Oh, absolutely!
Are going different directions.
I'm always looking and trying to find the right choices because I could easily swallow my tongue trying to do that stuff.
And of course, you're playing upside down and left-handed, which is I still think that's hilarious. Not hilarious, but I mean,
it is.
But it's just sort of like, oh, is that? Oh yeah, you are doing it like that. But yeah. It just happens.
I always make things easy on myself.
Are you, in fact, left-handed?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So that's, so that was almost a natural kind of thing.
Yeah, it's just a self-taught thing. I think I talked with quite a few people and over the years, and usually it's just simply something you didn't ask anybody if there was a left or right to it, and you just started out that way. And once you get going, you get further down the road a little bit, it's just too late to turn back.
Oh yeah, you can't turn yourself upside down.
And so there's some great guys out there doing it. Eric Gales is incredible. He's a wonderful player. He's doing really good.
Coco Montoya is going to be at Mexicali Live on the Wednesday evening. That's in Teaneck, and then you're going on the road. Or you're on the road now.
I'm on the road. I haven't stopped.
That's
I'm
right.
Not going to stop till mid May. Finally, get to go home and see my beautiful wife.
Okay, there you go. But in the meantime, here's a. As I said, on each record, you like as your homage to your mentor, really, your musical godfather, Albert Collins.
Absolutely.
You like to play one of his tunes. And
if I can do it with and make it sound like something, put something extra into it, I'm all about it.
What do you like about The Moon is Full as a song?
What do I like about? Well, that particular cut, I'm very proud of the fact that we were at the end of the recording session. I'll never forget that, and we said, God, we could do with one more track. And I don't know if we had the money or the time, but Mike Finnegan, the incredible keyboard player who I think the world of, he's a great guy. I just think the world of him. And he just said, come on, Coach, let's just knock it out. Let's just do it. It's okay. So we took one pass at it, and that's what you're hearing on there. We just, it was one of those things where we just pulled it off. And after we listened to the one pass, we said, well, it's done.
Yep. As Albert probably would have said.
Absolutely.
It's a great record. And but then you've been pulling out one after another. But you were just telling me while I was playing that this for you was, special.
Oh, absolutely.
In so many ways.
Yeah, a lot. Oh, just a great time. I mean, when I talked to Tony Bronagle about doing it and producing, and we've been knowing each other for many years. Been friends, and it was the right time and the right place and the right opportunity, and we decided to work together. He says, well, I got all these other guys want to do it. They want to do the session. I said, who? He goes, well, Mike Finnegan on keyboards. He wants in. Johnny Lee Shelve, obviously his studio, and Johnny Lee wants to play on it. I said, oh, great. Billy Watts, all these great people. And then my old, high school buddy, Bob Glaub on bass. He's playing with Jackson Brown right now. It was just old home week. We just hung out. We went to high school together, so it was a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Really good time.
And you just called out the tunes, or did each of them bring anything, or what?
We just had the songs picked out, and they did a little homework, and we just went in there and just started knocking them out. I mean, these guys are the cream of the crop. They're pretty amazing guys. They know the studio really well, so. They, with all the talking we did and fooling around, we got it done fairly quick.
Have you ever thought of reuniting for a minute with John Mayall? He's still going. I got a new album of him just over there.
I think I always think fondly of John, and there's been a couple of times since I left that we've played together here and there. Well, not very often. I would love to. I always, you know, I mean, he was a great guy. He was wonderful to work with. Great experience, and you know, if there was anything John would need that I could do for him, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Were you in the band when Blue Mitchell was playing?
No, me and Cal David were playing guitar first year, and the second year, me and Walter Trout did it for about four and a half years. Then I went on my own.
For a long time, he'd have jazz cats in the band.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny Allman was in the band for a long
Johnny time. Allman was in the band quite a while, like you said, Blue. There was a lot of guys he had over the days. You know, he did a lot of experimenting, which was great. I mean, it takes a lot of guts, and because you really do fight the record business when you start experimenting like that. They seem to have a place on a shelf that they want to put you in and don't want you to miss
exactly
mingle with the others. You know,
right.
Stay in your little spot, which I've always hated that. You know, the musicians that you know can interact. Something beautiful can happen. You know. When genres cross, it's a lot of really cool things can happen.
It's like the Grammys. I mean, it's like I used to vote for the Grammys, and then I got tired of it. But it's like, oh wait, this is the traditional blues record, and this is the contemporary blues record. What's the difference between them? Because you listen to this, I mean, and then they change it again, and then it's something else, and then it's now it's Americana.
Yeah, well, you know.
Hello.
We're gonna call it this, call it that, you know. I don't know. Music is music. If you love it, it feels right, it feels good to you, then that's all that should matter. I'm not too keen on bowling trophies. You know, my reward and what makes me feel good is a good audience and
that's true.
And me communicating with them. That's really the best compliment can be paid to a player like me.
It's you know, I was just saying about being on the road, but the one great thing about the road is that every audience is different.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes they're terrible, but sometimes they become part of the band.
Well, sometimes they're terrible, and sometimes I'm terrible.
Well, there you go. See, it all works out. It all evens out.
It evens out, yeah.
So then you write a song called Hard as Hell.
Oh, yeah.
I was just saying, you're a very nice guy, a very sweet guy, and you get this, you know, you get these pictures and everything. And, you know, plays so hard. I was talking to somebody who was it? Tommy Castro, I think, was about to go off and play a game.
Tommy Castro.
And I said,
that guy owes me $50.
There you go.
Yeah.
And see? And I said, no. How's it playing with Coco? He said, he's so good. He's so hard. It's so hard. It's hard for me to keep up with him.
You know? Oh no, Tommy's a great, great player. We've been buddies for many, many years.
But Hard as Hell. Where does this song? This is your song.
Oh, yeah, me and Dave Steen, the guy I write with, he's on all my albums. I've done his songs that he's written by himself, and I'm such a big fan of Dave Steen, and we've written a lot of stuff together. This was our, as we're getting older, we decided we want something a little more rough edge, and so on, which, you know, we still got a little bit, you know, and vinegar.
Oh, yeah.
We still got some, you know, and so we came up with this. It was just, I remember us laughing, listening to it afterwards, going, oh my God, this is pretty hard edge, but it's fun. It's fun. We like, me and Dave like variety.
There you go. Hard Truth is the new album. It's on Alligator. He's going to be at Mexicali Live. On the Wednesday evening, that's in Teaneck, and he's going to keep on the road. They're going down to Virginia, and then where?
Oh, geez. Well, back up here to do Teaneck, and then back down to, I guess, going down there towards Virginia again. And then, you know, then back up here, then back up down. I don't know. I take one gig at a time, you know, because I can't keep all that in my brain.
Will you then work your way across the country back to California?
That's the idea. Yeah, we're going to end up going through Texas and working our way back. Yeah, and, but that we won't hit that until about the third week of May.
But at least there's no more chicken wire in front of the bandstands anymore.
Not that we know of.
Not that you know of.
Yeah, it could be some surprises. You never know.
Well, that is absolutely true. It was good to have you come back, my friend, and I hope you come back sooner than 10 years from now.
Yes, let's try and do it a little
Although,
sooner.
Let's both be around 10 years from
that's
now
the first
and having
part.
A good time.
That's the first part. We both got to be here.
Yeah. Well, there's a song on this album called Old Habits Are Hard to Break, and that's true, about the good ones and the bad ones.
Yeah, it's true. It's a John Hyatt song.
But it's a Hard Truth is the new album. Coco Montoya, good to have you on the Blues Break on WBGO, and have a good time on the road.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you so much.